All right, I'm ready whenever you are. Okay. So let's just do this. Recording on and let's go. Hello everyone, welcome back to the podcast. This is your host Simone. Today I am just super excited to have a conversation with a lady who has done a lot, and her story is such that I think will bring a lot of hopefully hope and purpose to anyone listening today. So she's a woman on a mission, living an intentional life of purpose and love for God and humanity. She witnessed firsthand in all of basic rights, such as quality education, to children in similar environments, and this inspired her deep passion for education. She graduated as a best graduate student with first-class honors in library and information science from the University of Ilorin. As a change maker and community organizer, she's dedicated to self-development and career positioning. She has impacted over 4,000 people globally through her talks on productivity, career development, and leadership. She currently serves as programs coordinator at the Millennium Campus Network, which is a global organization empowering young leaders across more than 280 campuses worldwide. She's a woman on a mission, living an intentional life, like we talked about. And so today we'll just talk about, her stories and her drive to change communities and just, what we can tease from her life. So everyone, please join me in welcoming Miss Testimony Adebiyi to the podcast. Hello.
Hello, everyone. Thank you
Hello.
for having me more. I'm super excited to be here.
Thank you. So from your background itself, there's so many things to tease out from there. So first, you talked about low-income community, daughter of a teacher. Maybe just give us a little bit of background of how you grew up and how those experiences shape what you currently do.
Okay, so I mean, thankfully, Ikorodu has good PR now, thanks to people like
I am from Ikorodu, actually. That's my, yeah. I'm
interesting.
Ikorodu.
Wow,
Oh,
thankfully. I was just about to say Tunde Onakoya, but now I can mention more as well.
yeah. You're very kind. I think he does a better job of representing us.
I grew up in Ikorodu, and I remember, I mean, Ikorodu, they don't count us as part of Lagos. So in a
I
way,
wonder
we're just
why.
like, we're just like kind of behind. And I remember going for competitions, maybe representing my school outside Ikorodu. And I remember a particular incident. I overheard about two students talking to each other. And one goes like, "Oh, I dropped it in the computer lab." And I'm just there with the uniform that I super ironed just to look really presentable. And I'm wondering, you people have computer in your schools? How? For what? And that's just like an insight into the kind of education that I had. I remember the particular time I could hear the sound of the bells for lunch break, and tears just began to run down my face. Now I could hear the sound, but I wasn't in school. Because people afford the fees. The school was just like few buildings away from mine. So I could hear the laughter, I could hear all of those things. And I remember making that decision to myself that I was going to do everything that I can to ensure that nobody else has to go through that. And it just became like, whatever it is that I have, I'm going to make the most of it, because I knew again I had opportunities to leave Ikorodu, and I saw that there was life beyond what I'd been exposed to. And kind of in a way, I knew, I mean, I knew I was a smart kid. So I felt like where I was limiting me in so many ways. And not just me. I mean, I could just think it was a me thing. My mom was a teacher, and I know that there were many parents that would come bring their kids to my mom and say after school was not teaching them well enough. Of course, you pay a certain money, you don't expect to get a different kind of education. So they would come and my child cannot read, my child cannot, speak clearly. And I would see the level of transformation they would have in 2, 3 months. They are more confident, they're able to speak clearly, they're able to read, and they're able to come up with solutions. And my mom is like, "Look at that kid," So I could also see the power of education, and I knew deep within all of these children, there was so much more in them. But just because of the environment that we had found ourselves. So it wasn't just about me anymore. It wasn't about just my siblings, but every child in that low-income community, because I knew that we could all be so much more if we had access to quality education. So I would say that was where it wasn't exactly quality education in the beginning. Like I said, it was just more of, I want to help as many people as possible, especially those in low-income communities, access better opportunities, because everything that we can become is just based on what we can see. So if we have those opportunities that can expose them, so we'll go for more. I would say that was that was childhood for me. I knew I had limited opportunities, and I knew that I had to, if everybody was doing one, I had to go extra because I knew where I was coming from.
I mean, thanks for sharing that. And I loved how you said everything we can become stems from what we can see. And that also points to the power of not just imagination, because imagination has to be from something you're able to like dream of. And if you're not even able to see or even imagine that, how do you see that, right? Mm-hmm. But then to be able to see something or see someone or even positive role models to model what life could look like differently for you, I think that's the hope. And it's all right. That's actually why I do what I do. I want to show girls from our parts of the world just how tenable it is to live dream, to dream big, and you know, live that dream as well. So, as you're talking about your story, you kind of remind me of my story as well. But but this is about you and your time. So let's do honors to that. Can you just tell us a little bit about your family, as far as you know, how many kids and what your position in that family was?
Okay, so we were four. I'm the first of four.
Okay.
My mom is a teacher, my dad is a pastor.
Okay.
I think except you want specific childhood memories. Your story.
No, good. Four. Yeah. Okay. And so growing up you alluded to just how it seems like you guys had like a very tough upbringing in the sense of just not having a lot to be able to go to school and all of that. Was there a time where you were able to come out of that, that things changed for your family, to be able to finally go back to school? Yeah. That's one question. And second question would be, in addition to your parents and your family, because it seems like even despite the challenges you had financially, you had a very tight, you know, support group in your family. What were additional role models that really helped to create that imagination that you talked about that have, you know, shaped your future to date?
Okay, so yeah, so the out of school thing was more of term basis. It wasn't like maybe I was out of school for a year. It's just that feeling where like, oh, you're supposed to have paid your fees now, and it's not yet paid, so I have to go home. So it wasn't, I didn't have to skip, thankfully. I didn't have to skip. But you know what it does to the esteem of a child when you know your mates are in school, you're home.
It's like my mom is a teacher. It's like, you know, she's teaching other kids and we're home, you know?
You understand? Yeah. I'm missing out on school. I'm missing out. I'm coming back and I have to copy notes and all of that. But thankfully, again, I think one thing I was going to mention, it takes a village to raise a kid, especially in low-income communities. So this auntie there, that uncle there, and they're just able to pull everything together and get back to school. I would say in terms of additional role models, and I liked when you talked about young ladies, one person that always stands out for me is Michelle Obama. And I honestly don't remember how, I don't know how she did it, but I remember as a young girl in my dad's parlor, I would just say it was just about to happen. And I don't watch TV, but this particular day I was just paying attention. I think they were having like the inauguration. And I just saw, I didn't understand all of the glam and everything. I just saw this picture of a woman standing tall, you know, black, that looked like me. And she was waving and everybody was waving at her. And I was wondering, who is this? And they're like, she's the first lady of America. I'm like, okay, so a woman can be celebrated by so many people. A woman can, there was just something about her that spoke about, you know, value that she carried. I mean, you could be the president's wife, and you're just the president's wife. But there was something about the way she carried herself and the way people were perceiving her. And I could see also that this was somebody of substance. And there I said I was going to, when I grew up, I was going to be the first lady. I mean, that was the pinnacle. I don't want to be anymore, by the way. But that was one example at the beginning. And as time grew and I knew more about her story, I mean, and that's what I feel like many people also don't know. She had a thriving career before she met her husband. Mm-hmm. So she was successful in her own right. And even down to today, she still owns it. So I would say Michelle was a big one. She, Amanda, at some point as well, Adichie. I mean, she would always talk about women's rights. And all of that just, again, helped me expand my scope beyond what the society taught me who a woman should be, and just made me see that really the world is my oyster, and I can choose, you know, what I want it to look like. And at some point, it became Mrs. Ibukun Awosika, which is still Ibukun Awosika. Yeah. I mean, she represents all of the possibilities and so much more. Like she would always say, don't desire to be me, because you can even be more than, you know, her. So all of these people are, you know, represented who I could be. I can thrive in business if I want. If I want to be in career, I can be a highly successful one. I can also have a, you know, an amazing family at the same time. So I'll say all of these people had helped me redefine what it really means to be a young, you know, Black African girl.
Okay.
So, would you describe yourself in your 20s or in your 30s? 20s, okay. So, I'm just curious to know. I grew up in the 80s in Nigeria, right? And yeah. So, I describe myself as an analog framework, but digital brain. Because we saw all of it, you know, the millennium boom and now with the AI and all of that. Yeah. If you were to put into words what growing up in Nigeria was like for you as a female, how would you describe that?
As a female, I mean, I'm in my 20s. Why do I feel like I'm old? I'm trying to remember how it was. I would say in a way, I liked the part where we had access to more information. I remember growing up, there was this software on my dad's laptop, Encounter Kids.
Oh yeah, I love that.
I mean, it was a whole lot. I remember I would just be reading stuff and be like, wow.
It's also
and
colorful my mom had, too.
Yeah. that really helped me see the world beyond Ikorodu again. Yeah. I mean, Ikorodu is great, but yeah. And my mom had this, I call it a habit or culture. At every opportunity that she had, she always bought books for us. So books for us to read. And there's something that reading does to you. It helps you to transcend time. You can go back to the past. You can go to... It just allows you to put your creative abilities. So, I mean, even down to today, reading is something that has been part of me. So, and we didn't really do much of watching TV. I did not have that growing up. So, it was just more of school, church. And yeah, then I think to go came in between. I did not have a mobile phone until I finished secondary school. So it was quite a boring childhood anyway. But yeah, that was just what it looked like.
I think it was boring with books, you know. books make you travel 1,000 miles. I grew up in Shomolo, you know. So my parents were up and coming. So I grew up in tenement buildings. And it was a far cry from where I am right now. But it was books was really what teleported me away. I don't know how my parents did it. Despite not having a lot, they put all their money together to send us to a very good private school. But what that meant was that most of the kids in my class, you know, they went to the US for holidays. Like, that was the kind of school I went to. Meanwhile, I would go and see my grandmother in the cruise. That was my vacation, and I'll come out with Kokoro and Wara sometimes if I'm lucky. So, but books, I could stand tall. I could, you know, and I had an insatiable knowledge for just test for knowledge. I wanted to know a lot of stuff, so I buried myself in books, and that was what really saved me. So I look back now, and core things that really shaped my own childhood would be books and the radio. You know. Like two things I still podcasts as radio has given way to podcasts, and I now work as a professor, so books have always been my saving grace. And I love how you just highlighted, despite not having much, but still whatever was accessible to you in the form of knowledge, in the form of books, and applying yourself. So thanks for sharing that. Now you made your way from primary school and then secondary school and then university. So you studied library and information sciences, which, you know, great. Now, I know I went to, my first degree was in Nigeria, and there are two ways you get into school.
Yeah.
Write JAMB, or you write JAMB and then write diploma, whatever, you know, access. Mm-hmm. But you either you get the course you want, mm-hmm. or the course they give you, right? So can you just walk us through which of the path you fell into and how that is serving you to date?
Okay, that's a pretty good question. I mean, just a few minutes ago, I was having a conversation with like a senior, let me call her mommy, and she's about, you need to do your master's in librarianship. And I'm just on the call like, I don't want to be here. I mean, I fell into the category of those that wrote JAMB again, and it's quite, I always said it now with joy, but back then it wasn't funny at all. Mm-hmm. Like I said, I mean, my grades were good, so getting admission for me, I didn't think it was going to be a problem. You would have JAMB, for those that don't know JAMB, like your score, I think is about 400, I think. Mm-hmm. And I mean, if you have, I wasn't going for a competitive course. I wanted to be on TV. So I wanted mass communication. Mm. I did not want law. So I'm like, just give me mass comm. Let me go for it. And I had 275. I mean, if I was even going for law, that was good. And I was waiting for my admission. The time the circle came and it went, and I didn't hear a word back.
Wow.
I'm like, okay, what's going on? And before that, I had taken like a gap year. So I didn't apply the year I finished secondary school. So I did had that 1 year. Then I now had another year where there was simply no reason for being denied admission. And the third time, I just like, let me just try once again. Same school, same course. And this time I had 273. So I'm like, and I think my proficiency was 73%. I mean, there should still not be an excuse, but I saw library science and I was numb. I'm like, library speaking, that all you guys could come up with? And the plan was get into school, have good grades, and you'd switch into 100 level if you have really good grades. Mm-hmm. And again, that's like another problem, because when you have good grades, the department
will keep you.
But I was so determined. I was so determined to switch. And God really just had mercy on me, because my roommate then in 100 level was in mass communication.
Wow.
So I could see some of the courses they were doing. And when it was time to switch, I'm like, nope, I'm not going again. I'm not switching anymore. I could still pursue my desire for mass communication if I wanted to. And I was interning at my university radio station. So I had a feel of it. Then I did like an assessment of where the future was going to be. And I'm like, I love to talk, but I don't think I want to make a career out of this. So I stuck with library science, trying to figure out what my career was going to look like. And that eventually led me, first of all, then there was a tech boom and I started doing tech. Then I ran away again because I thought the only thing I could do was code. Then I was in digital marketing, just writing. Then my cousin asked me, you know, try again. There were no code part of tech, and I started to do product management. Unknown to me, I'd also be building my skills in project management and programs. And there was an opening for a program show. I'd apply, I'd get it, and I was doing it. And when I was done with school, there was another opening for a program show, and I went for it. In all of this, I'd started to discover that I naturally gravitated towards projects on education or youth development. So it just made sense that whatever it is I was going to do, coupled with my strength, I mean, and also God's wisdom, because again, the dots only make sense when you look back. I could see that, okay, this is a field I could be in, and this is how I could use my skills to make the world a better place. Where library science is serving me right now, can't exactly say, honestly. Yeah. I'm grateful it was library science, because I mean, many people say I did a lot in school. I don't think any other department will have given me that much liberty
to do what you did,
do all I did in school. And in the next maybe few years, I would find how the dot. I believe no knowledge is a waste, so the dots will still connect eventually.
I mean, thanks for sharing that, and I appreciate your perspective on it. One of my very good friends, he's a psychiatrist. He talked about how much of life is not what happens to us as much as how we frame it, right? Mm-hmm. And there's so many times in our life where we really want something to the point of, if I don't get it, then it's not going to be the best. And then you realize that, okay, you got something else, but then being able to make meaning out of it. And mm-hmm. that will only make more sense to you. Unless you're able to accept that this is now the path that is set in front of you, I will do my best. And you're even able to see that, okay, I can actually have two things now. I can pursue this degree, but also make this more like my side thing where I can go at it uninhibited, you know. Yeah. And what's saying that for you to be a master of a thing, you have to go through, you know, university for that. You can apply yourself. I bet I can even ask you, like, with your knowledge of, you know, library science, you're actually using that to also inform what you're doing in how you can make it possible. And that's something you never have had if you had just gone and studied mass communication. But again, you being able to find meaningfulness in it, I think that's really what life should be about.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Okay. Definitely. So why Ilorin, by the way? I mean, where are you from originally, like your state of origin? Are you Kwara?
Origin is, no, Osun State.
Osun State.
Yes, I really just a deeper explanation, but I really just wanted to run away from Lagos.
Oh, I see. And you couldn't do like UI or UNILAG. UNILAG is not really, just kidding.
I was never hyped. I was never hyped by UNILAG.
It's and okay,
UI, I still had like family in UI. UI is quite close to Lagos. Yeah. I did not want somewhere that, I hope my dad doesn't hear this, but I didn't want somewhere that my dad could just get into the car and be like, I'm going
to
visit.
It's okay. There's a point in life where you want that independence as well, and you don't have to explain why. What was campus life for you, like for you, and what would you say were some of the things that made it worth the while you were there?
Okay, so campus was, so I stayed on campus all through my 4 years in school. For those, I mean, different universities have different styles. Most people like to stay outside the campus. But for me, I stayed on campus because I liked the stability that it offered me and the time also. What made it worthwhile, I would say people. And I mean, there are a number of things that I wanted to share. I think one that always stands out, there was a particular time I was applying for a scholarship, you know, for school, and I had to take an exam. I wasn't feeling too well. But I'd applied and I was shortlisted. I was like, I was going to make this work no matter what. Something happened to my laptop. I was not able to use my laptop. So I think I left campus to go to a church member's place who was also taking the exam. So we'll take it together. It was time to take the exam and a laptop was dead. And I mean, if anything happened, she was going to take her exam first before me. And we're supposed to take it within the range of, I think, 1 to 2 p.m. So I called one of my friends and I explained to him that this is what is going on. I think I just vomited when I called him. And he's like, you know, where are you? Let me come pick you up. I landed at the junction and he took me to an eatery, cleared the entire eatery because I needed to be in a quiet place. Yeah. But everybody, I'm so sorry. Somebody needs to take an exam. Can you please be quiet and explain to everybody that I can remember so when my hands were shaky. I wasn't feeling too well. And everything that happened that morning had disrupted my... Everything that I'd read was literally already floating. And I did the exam. I didn't get the scholarship, but that experience stayed with me. And that was like one of the numerous times that my, you know, I would say my tribe, my core came true for me. There was another time where I had to travel to Abuja to go and collect an award for a competition I'd participated in. Again, I did not come from a very, you know, financially stable background. I was traveling to Abuja. That's a lot of money. I remember they're just like, just come, just look for a way to come down. You're going to be sorted. I rallied around, I got money to travel. I remember getting to the park. My friend calls me, like, okay, so what's the plan? I said, I'm traveling. No, I shall know that I will land. Anything that happened, I'm going to be fine. I was traveling by road, by the way. I was not flying, of course. And I remember he sent me money right there. I mean, just to feed. Now, it's not about the money. But again, at different times where I knew I was taking a lot on that I did not have to. But I had people that encouraged me and supported me and showed me it's okay to, because again, I felt like, I mean, most people thought I was doing too much. because I was actually doing a lot. But the people that I had around me kept reminding me, yes, you can do this. Oh, you want to do this? No problem. What do you need? How can we show up for you? I mean, there's so many examples I could use of how people, my friends, big sisters came through. And again, people particularly that expanded my scope. So many people around me were also people that were temp doing too much. There's one of my big sisters that she was in engineering. She was running a foundation. She was running a business at the same time. So whenever I came and I'm like, I'm tired, I don't want to do this anymore, she's like, excuse me, ma, what's your CPG? Don't tell me that and all of that. So it was hard. It was fulfilling because, again, seeing, you know, there's a challenge in front of you. You surmount it. You're going to the next level. And it builds you. You build strength that you don't know you already have. There's another one coming and you go for it. So, I think somebody told me this in 100 level and it stayed with me. Ensure you're not just going through school. Ensure school goes through you. And I can stand confidently and say, oh, yes, I did maximize my 4 years in school. So it was good. Very good.
That's great. I mean, you've highlighted the importance of community, how we shouldn't do life alone. And not just community, the right kind of community. So one of the things you put in your bio was Millennium Campus Network. And on your name, I can see Team MCN. can you tell us a little bit about that and what, you know, how your level of involvement with that?
Okay, so the Millennium Fellowship is a leadership training program for undergraduates across the world. So I participated in the Millennium Fellowship when I was in school. And they would also have this call for volunteers to review, you know, the next cohorts coming in. So I was part of the committee. And when I saw that there was an opening as well, I mean, like I said, one of the things that really interests me is youth development. In any way I can contribute to that, sign me up. So I saw the opening and I applied, and glory to God, I got in as a programs coordinator. So as programs coordinator, I'm to support the implementation of the program. So we'd have, for instance, my job, I was in charge of about 40 campuses in different continents, in Rwanda, in Toronto, in Ohio. Okay, so what's going on your campus? Okay, this is how you need to execute the fellowship. This is how you need to relate to the fellows. This is how you carry out your social impact project. Okay, this is what you need to do. And being, being there with them every step of the way in helping them create change in their own local communities. And that's another beautiful thing about the Millennium Fellowship, which I loved. We're not just training you, we are also sending you to the field to do something. So at the end of the day, I could also say, oh yes, I contributed to a number of projects that I wasn't even there physically, but I knew that my input was there. And just also helping the young leaders see how much power they yield when they choose to be problem solvers rather than just identifying the problems in our communities. So that was pretty much what my role is at MCN.
Okay. Are you still involved with them?
Yes.
Okay, great. Now, this is more of a little bit of a curveball, but I think it's up your alley. I think you'll be able to answer it. And if you're not, let me know. That's okay. So one of the things, so it's going to be a two-in-one question. The first one is, from your story, I could see that you, like, just growing up, you had some, there were some challenges, right, with the financial part of it. And maybe you lived in a place that wasn't quite, you know, given the financial circumstances you guys went through. Now, statistically, it might seem like, maybe I'm also projecting it, so you can always call me to order. It might seem that you, like, where you are right now is a far cry from where you should be if you compare yourself to people that you grew up with. Like, so that's one. So the question for that would be, how do you cope with that? The way I've been described, they've described it to me, is more like survivor's guilt. You know, how do you cope with that one? And how are you paying it forward to younger people that are coming, you know, behind you, as far as all the things that you've been, people that have invested in you and all the, because you've talked about people that have helped you and helped you get to this point. Like, what are the ways you're giving back to others as well?
Okay, so the first part is how do I undo looking back? I know that I'm
and not feeling guilty, like, you know, you survive, like, yeah. You know, like, wow, like, this could have been me, like, but it could be anything, teenage pregnancy, or, you know, all that kind of stuff.
I think just switching the emotions to gratitude, because again, all of those reminders are like, this is where I could be, but this is where I am. And again, every day I'm always so grateful to God. Like, again, like you said, you are seeing Victoria representations of what it could have. I mean, even, let's not even go back to, you know, community, just the people that I graduated with. I look and I'm like, nah, I'm not supposed to be here. There are certain places I shouldn't get to yet, but I am here. And again, it's just so evident that, okay, as much as even people could, you know, I could say, yeah, I was hardworking, there were a number of things I did differently. But really, to be honest, I have enjoyed the grace of God. Because again, there are probably people that are working harder, people that are more resilient, people... So I would prefer to just switch that to gratitude. And other intentional ways that I try to pour, one of that would be having conversations like this. So when people see me on social media, they're like, ah, testimony. To be honest, I would rather not share anything. I don't, I like to keep to myself most of the time, but I've, one of the things I've also learned is most of what I know and people that have expanded my scope, I was able to learn from them because they chose to share. And if I keep to myself, I'm also denying other people whose destinies are tied to mine. So it's bigger than what I want. It's bigger than how I feel. I have to share my story. So that's just one way. And I also have a community. So last year I did something like a meet and greet, and that was the first time I really sat down to share my story and how the journey has been. And these people, I also hold them accountable and share regularly. Okay, this is what is working. And there are other people who I have just, I mean, people picked me. I would say pick as well. You know, when they're like, I met this lady, she's quite driven. I want to help her. Okay, what are you working on? Okay, why not reach out to this person? Oh, check out this opportunity. So in short, in my own little way, I'm also doing that for other people. Okay, hi, what's... I mean, sometimes I just need people to ask me, how are you doing? How are your grades? Because again, when everything seems to be going well, people just assume that you're always good. So I also ensure that when I see people that are on that trajectory, I'm also like, hi, okay, if these challenges come your way, this is how you do this, this is how you do that. And it's been fulfilling so far, and I'm always grateful for the privilege to be part of other stories.
I loved what you said about... thank you so much for your robust response. I love so many things you said. Switching the emotions to gratitude and knowing that no matter how you feel, this is beyond you, right? You have a mandate to keep sharing your story. And I think it's also very biblical, because the Bible even says we overcame the devil by, you know, the word of the Lamb and the word of our testimony. And there's so much power that comes with just saying, hey, this was how I grew up, but... this is no, you know, it's how I grew up, and, you know.
Yeah.
So that way you're painting a more realistic picture, because people just see you outside glowing and looking all put together. But it's like, hold on, like, you know, yeah, you see that, but there's a story behind it. And it's so encouraging, because they can see the fruits, they can see the productivity and the output and the passion. But being able to see the story behind it, that's the beauty of it. And I feel like if we all did that more and more often... that'd be very, very helpful. So thanks for that reminder. So being in your 20s and being exposed to so much, because, I mean, I always say, boy, am I glad I wasn't born in this age, because I don't know how people keep up with so much. Social media aside, now with the AI boom and all that. How do you stay grounded? How do you hold on to those values you seem to have that have served you very well? How do you stay grounded and not get tempted by what the world has to offer?
That's a really good question. I would say, I always like to say, there's no matter what might change, and that's like how the world is constantly changing. There's really only one person that doesn't change, and that's God, to be honest. And I know that Because, I mean, I don't pray for it. I'm like, if something happens and I don't have a job, I know that there's someone that I can always go to that has my back. I know I can't be hungry. They take all of the stories and they're like, there's someone starting from ground zero. I know that even much more than what has happened, it can happen times two of that because of who my source is. So my source, again, I always remind myself, I believe in God, and everything that I have and still will have, it's God that is going to give them to me. So ensuring that I stay connected, and I'll be very realistic. All of the jobs that I take, all of the everything, I ensure that I don't take things that would not allow me stay connected. So my quiet time, you know, fellowshipping with other brethren, which I'm really, really glad. I mean, I think last year work was a lot. I know that Sundays, church service days are my best days because I can get there and I know that everybody can be screaming outside, but once I get in, things are calm. I know that God loves me. My boss might be screaming. Things might not be going well at work, but this is constant. So I ensure that no matter what, no matter how crazy my day is, there's time for me to pray. Again, reminding myself, because again, usually when people get, because like you said, we live in a very distracting world. You can open, right now I'm getting notifications, it's that bad. And it's like, I need to attend to this, I need to attend to that. And there's just so many things happening. But again, where I can be like, okay, this is who I am, this is what I need to do. And yes, just staying connected. For me, that would be it. Staying connected.
Staying connected to the source, yes.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Thanks for sharing that. Seems like you have your faith is what really stays you grounded, keeps you grounded, and
yeah,
I appreciate you sharing that. For my next question for you, really look at generational gaps, right? I strongly believe that they provide a unique opportunity for mutual learning and growth. So I'm turning 40 soon, and I have a sibling who is still in his 20s, right? And I have one who is in their 30s. And I also, I'm a professor. I mix with people from all walks of life. In my classroom where I teach, I have students who are in 20s, and then some that come back and in their 50s, 60s, coming back to pharmacy school. So I'm exposed to all kinds of generational gaps. That said, I still believe that every generation brings its own set of values, experience, and perspective. It would be very brash to look down on people because they're older and slow, or they're younger and inexperienced. We have something we can learn from one another. So I'm curious from your perspective as a 20-year-old. So this question will be threefold. One would be, horizontally, what do you think my generation can learn from yours? Because we hear a lot about our Gen Z body, you know, these kids, they have no loyalty. Anything that costs them their mental health, peace, they're out. They don't even give you 2-week notice. What can we learn from your generation?
I mean, I love the perspective, because every time I hear Gen Z this, Gen Z that, I'm like, can we not have this discussion again? It's okay, we get it, we get the point. We know we have our excesses, but I also
every generation doesn't have. Every generation has
exactly
their excesses.
Exactly. So I mean, I believe that we know our excesses. We've learned from you guys. Like, okay, we're going to do this different. If they're giving us feedback on, okay, we should not do this way, we are to learn from that and ensure, like, the next guys coming up, you know, they're even better than us. But yes, also, like you said, leveraging on the strength of those. I think for us, one thing I would say is, which can, like you said, which can be bad, but for me, I would say it's a huge strength. And I would say in terms of risk taking. And that's like, that's why, like you said, any little inconvenience or like, peace out, like, I'm out of here. And I'm saying risk because the innovation is at its peak right now.
Yeah.
And that's because there were many people that decided to do something that was out of, you know, the ordinary, what we're not used to. So somebody like Bill Gates saying, for instance, I mean, you're supposed to go to school, you're not supposed to drop out. That was like the conventional way that everybody was going through. I mean, it's not our generation, but I mean, started from there. And now you now have somebody, just like a child growing up, and I don't want to be a lawyer, or I don't have plans, I'm a content creator, and I'm a programmers coordinator. That was not a job title years ago, but because of that, I said, okay, we can do this. Okay, I have friends that are like, I'm a startup founder, and I'm like, are you sure you want to go that route? And they're like, yeah, I don't want to work for anybody. Yeah. And again, because, and I've seen it over and over again, I risk, yes, but when it comes with reward, it's also like really, really good. And that's like one area I would say, and not to justify our behavior, because we know that I quit from this company, I can go to another place and get another one. It doesn't help in the long term, because again, it doesn't help. But knowing that there's always going to be another option. So in terms of risk, and we're very vocal, so whatever our parents had to put up with, we are like, no, and we are stepping out. It's now, because I also had to like learn, what are the career rules and all. Had to learn, you don't quit your job if you don't have another one yet. Gen Z, we don't really send like that.
They're looking from afar. I get a lot of anxiety just the way you guys are. So don't get me wrong, I love the balls in you people, but I feel like it's also you're feeling the vacuum that the other generation didn't feel. The same way the generation coming after you, we show you guys shaggy. So the shaggy just keeps getting recycled, and we're just here to watch and laugh and just grab our popcorn and be like, ha ha. Eat that sucker.
That laugh was too. You're really waiting for
popcorn is ready to be toasted. It's double and la casera.
Wow. Now we are now having Gen Z conversations. I think we're getting a lot of people already, like, because you're not always going to be where Gen Z is, but now adulthood is also coming, so you're getting to your 30s, you're getting to 40s, life is getting real, so they're not like, I think I shouldn't have quit that job. Have done this. Now this is just a random example. Somebody was like, my parents used to wake us up to pray for us. I did not get to the point. Now I'm married. Who is going to pray for my children? I'm like, I'm just a risk taker, so that I summarize that answer. In terms of risk, we'll put it there.
Okay. Again, I love how you just shared it, because there's so much you can learn from one another. So that was a horizontal question. Now, vertically, what think my generation, and I hate to put it as us versus them, but just for the sake of simplification, vertically, what think my generation could teach yours based on our experiences collectively?
I would say relationships.
How so?
Because Gen Z's, we have social media, but in a way, it has made us more disconnected from each other. You now have the era of status viewers. That should not even be
a category of friendship.
So I would say we're losing that touch. I'm guilty of this as well. At home with family, for instance, and everybody's on their phones. We don't exactly know what's going on in each other's
lives. Yeah,
I think our parents found, and not just also saying my parents, there's also your generation who understood, how to keep in touch, how to build real bonds. Our relationship, most of our relationship right now is like we vibe, and that is it. We're probably not going to have like deep conversations, and this is also me just sharing. I'm thinking somebody like my mom would tell me about this friend they met in school, they still talk. She can even send me to her right now. I think about it, I don't really think there's somebody in school. Maybe my department, I have friends in school, yes, I can, but compared to how she talks about her friends, I don't really get to that level. So I would say, in terms of communal living, in terms of building really strong relationships that would serve you long term, not just for the moment, would not always be young, you would also need people that you have real life conversations with. So I would say, in terms of relationships, you guys did a much better job than we do.
wow, that's, thanks for saying that, really. And when you were saying, I was like, okay, I mean, isn't every generation like that? But I realized that with the, what's the word, the boon of social media, there's that perception of closeness, which is not always. And don't get me wrong, as someone who grew up in a generation where we used to take down phone numbers in, you know, diaries, and we'll go to take, and I'm probably aging myself now, but we had this bank of calling cards. We have to go to the phone booth and queue up to make a call, and you hope that there's a person at the end of the line is at home to pick up your call, or you write letters, and you go to the, you stamp it with your saliva, and then you pray that the person gets it whenever, if the postmaster was being nice for that, you know, whole era. But now there's just so much. I can do a video call and see people, and they can, their mouth can move. You know, while I was in high school, Skype wasn't even a thing, not talk less of WhatsApp, right? Mm-hmm. And we don't even know what the future holds with this AI and robots and things coming to disrupt our life in good and bad ways that we're yet to see. But yeah, thanks for lighting them. So we've talked about the horizontal and vertical part of it. Now, for the generations that are behind you, so your nemesis, as in quote, as it were, what would you like for them? The ones who will be buying Ashebi and popcorn for.
Those guys are ancestors.
What would you like to pass along to them as far as wisdom from your generation? Things they can do better off, or they should not. Much of, do better with,
So I think we had the information, it us, and I have a feeling that they are going to be overloaded with information, because in a way we were learning new things. They were born to do it. So there's this, there's that, there's a lot of options, and we also probably will not be able to really guide them well, because I mean, somebody is waking. I mean, we're having a conversation with somebody, and like, my kids are going to start, you know, learning how to code once they are two. I'm like, your parents didn't do that to you. So I would say still giving them that option to, and okay, so this is me not talking to their parents, but talking to them directly. So just, I know there's so many options. There's so many things you could be. You could be a content creator. You could be a vlogger. I don't know. You could be a product manager. You don't have to be a lawyer. Yes, we've crossed that stage. But at the bane of it, I would also say look at career building from the perspective of solving a problem. While you don't want to mistake just doing activities. I mean, there are people that they are gamers, that's their profession. In a way, still tied to just really solving a problem that people can pay for. Because that's what will keep you relevant. So, I mean, there are a lot of options. I don't have anything against content creators. I wish I had a YouTube channel that was paying me in dollars monthly. I don't want to go to work. I love work. I'm just joking. But still time whatever it is that you're doing to problem solving, and don't be carried away by the glitz. And I think that's another thing my generation are not learning. No matter how easy it gets, it doesn't still take out the element of hard work. If you want to build something that would last you, you need to work hard for it. So wish you guys the very best. Hopefully we don't have to eat popcorn.
Maybe shawarma. thanks for that. I think what you've just shared, anyone can pick from that, whether they are younger or older. You know, it's about just keeping it moving and taking what you can learn. So you've talked a lot about your life and things that motivate you and what you're currently doing, and how you're also giving it back. What are your future aspirations? Where do you see yourself and the platforms you're building in the next 5 to 10 years?
So I see myself at the center of high-level programs, not just in Nigeria anymore, in other African countries around education, youth development, gender equality, and just creating more opportunities for young people to contribute meaningfully in terms of contributing to Africa's prosperity. I believe that and our population will continue to grow. The young people that we have are a huge percentage of our population. If we can convert that into a valuable resource, I think that would go a really long way. Probably people will not have to jackpot that much anymore. Okay. I also want to jackpot. Just putting that out there. But knowing that Africa can stand really and can really be a giant. So I see myself, yes, high-level programs, okay, in terms of policies, what policies are we pushing? What programs are we having? How are we building more youths in terms of capacity? So being at the front line of that execution.
That's great. I mean, wish you all the best with what you're doing. And I love how you take it from, you know, bottom up, right? I'm doing this, but my goal is also to impact policies, right? And it also ties to what you, when you talked about MCN, your passion for youth development. And I can also imagine that that was born out of just how you grew up and seeing all the gaps you experienced and how much the pathway to education has, you know, created life for you that you see the benefit in that, and that's something you like to replicate for those that are coming. And that's great. That's great. So, as a firstborn, do you feel a lot of pressure to always be a positive role model from your siblings? If you do, how do you manage all of that pressure?
Yeah, I used to, because not anymore. I think I've learned that if I really want to be a role model, I want to teach them to be themselves. And if I keep trying to be that perfect figure, I'm not being myself. So, I mean, if you run into my siblings, they think I'm the most unserious person on the planet, because I'm just like, I mean, this is me unfiltered, and just ensuring there's that human side of me. The world might see me as, it's testimony, but they see all of the shades. So I would say, how do I handle the pressure? First of all, I tell them that I'm not perfect. I always say it to them. And I think got to a point again, when I got into school, I wanted to be the overall best graduating student, get my first class because my dad said so. And, you know, you get to a point where you push and you need a stronger why to keep pushing. I think I got to that point and I'm like, if I'm going to do this, I'm not going to do this for somebody else. And, because again, I couldn't go back and say these were the challenges that I was facing. I was going to disappoint them and all of that. I think I just dealt with it. God helped me to deal with it and I moved past it. Whichever place I get to, God did it. I didn't do it for anybody and I'm always grateful. So yeah, I think I've, to a certain extent, I've taken that pressure. Everybody will be fine eventually. There's a statement that stuck with me, just living for the audience of one. What does God say? As long as I'm in that part, the world will just, it's easier said than done, but I mean, every day I just walk more in that reality.
That is beautifully said. Thanks a lot. So I'm done with most of my questions, but I don't know, I want to give you a chance to ask me whatever question you want to ask, if there are any things you're curious to know.
If you could, so you're turning 40 soon.
Don't say it in that scary way. my heart just sank. Like, I don't feel 40, by the way. I don't feel anywhere near 40. As a matter of fact, let me tell you a joke. So my colleagues from Unilag, we have a WhatsApp chat, and a friend of mine she had a birthday just earlier this month. And I was like, oh, happy birthday. And then somebody chimed in and said, oh, happy 40th birthday. I'm like, oh, she's 40. She's so old. And I realized, oh my God, I'm almost 40 as well. I'm old. Because when you're in your 20s, when I was in my 20s, anyone 40 was like dinosaur. But I don't feel 40. I still feel like 17 or 20 inside, you know. But anyway, sorry. Back to you and your question.
I have no right to say this, but even when people tell me, okay, so I'm turning 23 this year and I don't believe it. I'm like, that's not my age.
It's gonna go like a blow. It's gonna go so fast. You don't know what hits you. You'll be like, what? But in your 30s, things are gonna slow down because you wake up some days and you're like, if you sleep on the wrong side of your body's gonna tell you.
Wow.
Oh yeah. You know how you can just sleep anywhere on a chair? Yeah. In your 20s, carelessly, you wake up and you're in the same spot. Not in your 30s. You don't wake up in that same spot. By the time you wake up, your neck is going and your knees are doing. It's just something about being in your 30s that will humble you. But you can still fight it.
I think that was part of what I was going to ask you.
Okay.
You just told me one. I probably should start working out earlier.
It's well, because whatever you do in your 20s will sneak up on you. You can't get away with it in your 30s. So after your 20s, I know you haven't asked your question. I keep interrupting you.
Yeah.
After your 20s, as you're entering 30s, you will learn quickly how to act. Nobody's going to, no matter how I tell you, you're going to forget about the testimony. Just live your best life as you can. But by the time, all the things you were doing in your 20s and getting away with, like you can eat anything, you won't put on the weight, you still look, you know, like a size 2. In your 30s, your metabolism just kind of go down a little bit. And then you start realizing that, oh, I can't get away with that anymore. Oh, like, you know, I'm hitting the gym, but this body is not gymming like it's supposed to be. Then you now start adjusting. Then humility will now set in. You will now realize that, okay, I can't be sleeping anyhow, just on the sofa or on the table. I have to make sure I use the right pillow. It's when you start, see people start doing, you know, spa day and self-care. You think we're just doing because we want to do hashtag on Instagram? No. Our body is like demanding a testimony. That's
why. Let me check.
Yeah, but what was your question? Sorry, my dear.
The question was like, if you could go back to your 20s, what would you tell your younger self?
Yeah. If I could go back in my 20s, what would I tell my younger self?
Yeah.
That's a very loaded question. One is, I would say stop worrying, but I know you still keep worrying anyways. So what's the point of telling you that? You're worrying. Enjoy the present moment. Because of my life experiences, you know, I kind of hinted at how I grew up, but there's some events in my childhood that kind of made it very hard to always be in the moment. I'm very future oriented, you know, and I'm also creative. So my glass is never half full, half empty. It's like, when is the next glass? When are we finding the next glass? You know, I'm always just keep on the move. And sometimes it's hard for me to really stay in the present and enjoy the moment. So I won't tell my younger self to stop worrying, because the worries, I don't even know what worries is like the right term for it.
Yeah.
The hopes and where I want, because the worries, I see it as an over expression of the hopes I have for myself.
Okay. So yeah.
Just balance it out a little bit, because even as a Christian, you shouldn't worry, because the Bible says cast all of your worries, right?
Yeah.
So all
your
hopes and your dreams and ambitions, you're going to get it done. We've seen the future. You're great. You're going to do great things. But enjoy the moment and don't rob yourself of just celebrating those wins you're having right now at the cost of the future. That's one. Also be kinder to myself. I'm the hardest person on myself. Like, sometimes, well, in my 20s, the way I would just, and I think it also came from a standpoint of anxiety. Like, the things I would say to myself when I didn't get things done right, or they were not very nice things, and I wouldn't even dare utter that to the next person. So like, being kinder and being gentler with myself, and just keep going on with the way you're maintaining relationships, because those relationships that you build then are the ones that have, you know, because you can never make old friends. You can never make old friends. In your 40s, it's harder to make new friends, because there needs to be an app where you can just scan and people know your bad habits and your hang-ups and your good side. Like, I can't start introducing myself. It's so stressful. Forget about it. Take me as I am. Just leave me, you know. So invest in those friendships, the ones that really matter, because those are the ones that will serve as part of your tribe when the rubber hits the road. And then have a little bit of fun. Have a little bit of fun and you know, genuinely be happy. Be happy at the stride you made, even if you can't see the forest for the trees. Be happy at the 'cause a lot of what I did, even growing up, like, I used to read a lot of books. Like, those were, like, my saving grace. I enjoyed them then, but they really paved a lot of way for me, because the knowledge I gained is how I'm able to, like, speak confidently and express myself and even bring others into conversations. So whatever you're doing now in your 20s, you don't know how those habits built up to shape you in the future, but just keep going and be disciplined in what you do. Take care of your body. Take care of your health. Eat the right things. Trust the process. Don't rush through life. Embrace the journey. Embrace the mistakes. And yeah, this is what I would tell my younger self.
Yeah, that's a lot.
A lot, yeah.
I definitely, and I'm going to remember.
Okay.
Maybe not all, but
not all of it. But enjoy the moment. Like, even a 60-year-old can enter this conversation and look at us like, what are these babies talking about? You know, it's all relative, right? The best year of your life is the one you have right now in front of you.
Right now.
And so whatever you can take from people, and the way I even see myself, like, I'm like a squirrel, and I gather nuggets from people, and I just, my head is full of all kinds of wisdom, not from my lived experiences, thank God, from others' lives, and you know, and those are the stories that shape my life. Like, I don't have to always learn from my experience. I hope not to always be the only teacher in my life. So I gather a lot of information as I go around life, and that has shaped my conversations, my outlook about the world. But nothing beats the place of discipline, you know, whatever that might mean, self-discipline. I grew up in an environment that wasn't very wholesome. Well, my parents, they refused to let us be a reflection of that. How did I don't know? You know, and I thank God for that. Books, education, staying out of trouble, reading. Again, those are the things that and then my faith, you know, my community, church community, healthy communities, studying the word and, you know, doing good things and trying to give back. Those are the core values I still live by, even, you know, many years going away from Shomolo. So yeah, I feel like these are things that for people like us, it's almost like bringing anyone from that environment that has made it out of there. They always tell you the same thing. Education and good mentors. Education and good mentors. It's a success story. And no matter how you want to replicate it many times, those things, education, good mentors, and, you know, a strong faith and all that, those are things that get you out of those communities.
Beautiful. Thank you so much for sharing that.
Thank you. I felt like with you, I went on a ride in my childhood and seeing bits of my stories. And I hardly do that thing with my guests where I try to, like, you know, but there's a way, I don't know, you kind of brought something out of me, which, you know, I hope it was worth your time as well. But I want to just thank you for all that you've shared today. And I'm very encouraged by your story, especially the impact it's going to have. I know with so much on social media and where the viral news are usually the ones that are very scandalous get into play, stories like yours are a powerful reminder that no matter where we come from, right, with passion, with purpose, with determination, with we can create an impact that stretches across the world, right? And your journey from what you term a low-income community now to now becoming a global change maker. We have the power to make a difference, and it starts with believing in ourselves and the work we do. So I hope that anyone listening to this will remember that our mission in life, no matter how big or small, can change lives, and find a way to tell your story and make meaningfulness of your story. Whether you didn't get into law school or media mass communication, or you know, your childhood wasn't as great as you wanted to be, how are you writing those stories? What meaning are you ascribing to those stories? And you don't have any meaning yet, keep going until that meaning comes to you. You are the only one allowed to, you know, create that meaning. I can't tell it for you. But we hope that in all you do, you find purpose in your life and you recycle that purpose, because this is how we set our stories free and encourage those around us. So thanks a lot, Testimony, and I hope to have you on the show again at another time. But I'm so encouraged by you, and I wish you the very best in all of your future endeavors.
Thank you so much, man. Hopefully, I'm not a pharmacist, but be in your class someday. I like the extra.
Okay. That'll be a date. Let's look forward to that. Well, enjoy the rest of your evening, and I thank you so much for your time.
All right. Thank you.
Bye. Bye, everyone.